Patrick Mazza, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Glad to be back.
Patrick Mazza is an independent journalist, researcher, and activist, too, focused on climate and global sustainability. He was formerly research director at Climate Solutions, a co-founder of that group, currently serves as a member of 350 Seattle's Governing Hub, and he's co-facilitator of its Community Solutions Work Group. Patrick, before we begin talking today about Community Solutions, you have a new book, and tell us about the Civil Disobedience Action and what's happened.
Well, actually, the Civil Disobedience Action and the book are kind of two sides of the same coin. Civil Disobedience Action happened back in September 2014 when, along with four other people, we erected a tripod across a track in front of an oil train at BNSF Delta Yard in Everett, Washington, and attached ourselves to it and managed to position for 8 hours a statement of protest against the dangerous oil train traffic, and of course, not just dangerous for our cities and places and waters, but also for our climate. Our new book is about providing alternatives to railroads beyond bulk oil and coal traffic, and it's called Solutionary Rail, a people-powered campaign to electrify America's railroads and open corridors to a clean energy future. So really, I helped pull together a bunch of material that was created by the Solutionary Rail team, which was organized by the Backbone Campaign. And the green proposal that the team came up with was to electrify railroads with renewable energy and to modernize them, to use those improvements to both improve the speeds and reliability, and thus bring a lot of the freight back from trucks and create really competitive intercity passenger service. So this book has just come out. It's available on Amazon, Solutionary Rail, and really it's about a campaign to jumpstart rail electrification in the U.S. You're aiming at BNSF and Warren Buffett to do a demonstration project on the Northern Transcon from Chicago to Seattle and have an innovative way of financing it. It's a way of getting the public back into railroads. Electrification infrastructure would be owned by the public, financed by the public, leased by the railroads. So anyway, you know, this is a way of saying, hey, you've got other options besides transporting this dangerous cargo.
It's a continuation of actually your work on solutions. Your previous book was Stormy Weather, 101 Solutions to Global Climate Change with Guy Donce. Patrick, you also do a blog, Cascadia Planet. You wrote a wonderful piece last month on the importance of transforming our local communities, that is, where we live. Your emphasis on the local seems now even more important with Trump and his climate change denier friends in the Congress pledged to undo what little has been accomplished over the last 30 years as to climate change. Tell us about Trumpism, what it's likely to do, and why the local is so important.
Well, Trump has said he's going to pull out of the Clean Power Plan, which was a plan to reduce coal plant emissions 30% from 25 levels by 2030. Honestly, it wasn't ready to kick in until 2022, result of a 2007 Supreme Court decision which said power plants have to be regulated under the Clean Air Act because they are a threat to human health. Carbon dioxide and climate change are threats to human health. Well, you know, so this was the compromised Obama way of dealing with it, something that would not go into effect, you know, that 2007 Supreme Court decision that would not go into effect until 2022 and then reduce emissions at a totally inadequate rate. That's a big part of the U.S. commitment to the Paris Accords. Trump is threatening to throw even that out. And then, it's come out recently, Trump is also, looks like they might simply cut out all of NASA's climate science programs, which is utterly tragic and catastrophic. That's a real benefit for us to really understand what's going on in the world. I mean, other nations have climate research programs, but, you know, the U.S. is the keystone. And then we'll see approvals of all kinds of nasty fossil fuel infrastructure, such as Dakota Access Pipeline.
And giveaways of public lands to the coal companies. It's going to be a gold rush, actually, by all of these predators to get public lands and exploit them. There are so many ways. There may also be huge subsidies to the investor-owned utilities to take over renewable energy. That's another side of that story. It seems to me Trumpism is really dangerous and horrible, although Trump is not the emperor, and there's going to be resistance of many, many kinds. One part of the resistance is the local, though. It seems to me with Trump and the Republicans at the utterly unrestrained in the federal government, except by corporate power. It's going to be huge fights, actually, about regulation, because lots of corporations like parts of it, as there will be huge fights about health care and everything else. He's thrown everything open, and the predators are going to profit greatly. But at the local, it seems to me, is where there's tremendous capacity now in the U.S., in the cities, and even in neighborhoods, to not just resist Trump, but to build alternatives that are models for sustainability, which at some point are going to become real important. Tell us about that.
Well, Portland was actually the first city in the U.S. to create its own climate plan back in the early 90s. And we had been kind of agitating for a greener city and more sustainable. I was writing a column back then for the Portland Alliance on green cities. So Portland did this, and actually over the years has become a model for more efficient buildings, more efficient transportation, more use of renewable energy, and that has been picked up. It's now a major movement of cities across the U.S. and across the world. It's very common for cities to have climate action plans with really ambitious goals, and cities really have been. At a time when the federal government has been slow to act or not acting at all, and when action at state levels has been basically frozen, cities have been moving ahead in really powerful ways, and that's only going to become more important as we go on. Cities, metropolitan areas, are the source of most of the world's carbon emissions. It happens here.
Most people, in fact, live in great urban concentrations across the entire planet. More than half of the people are in cities, and cities are richer, and it's the demands of the cities that lead to the mutilation and predation and rape of the countryside. When cities reconstruct, it has enormous implications for the entire planet.
Yes, indeed. So what is crystallizing is, I think, a new municipal movement. And it won't just be climate. I really see a broad multi-issue movement coming up that has a lot of street action to it. I mean, it'll be about police brutality, militarization of the police. It'll be about affordable housing. It'll be about good transit. It'll be about justice. And it will be about reducing pollution, increasing renewable energy. I know there's discussions going on right now. You can see, you know, in Seattle, we're connecting up the affordable housing issue with the climate issue, because as with Portland, rents are going insane. People are being driven out of the cities where they have to drive more. So we're seeing this link up of justice issues, climate issues. I think what we're going to see is a crystallization of urban-based movements that network with each other, that develop common visions, and that really become the heart and soul of progressive movement in this country.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Patrick Mazza, who lived in Portland for quite a number of years, was editor of the Portland Alliance in those glory days, and wrote a lot. He's now in Seattle. He was with Climate Solutions, the director of research. He's still reading and writing and organizing. He's on probation, though, for a civil disobedience action for stopping oil trains. Patrick, you pointed out that Portland's climate action plan was the first in this country and very comprehensive and very thoughtful and still is, and it's been updated. The problem is that its goals are all right, but deeply into the future. Many cities have gone way beyond Portland now in their planning and even in their implementation. We can't really get into that, but it's quite disappointing, actually, there's really a necessity for pushing the Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Portland City Council that have really been laggards. They think it's the art of the possible to set goals that are so far in the future that they're likely not to be met because climate change will obliterate us before they come to really reconstruct the city. And there's so many things they could do. Patrick, you pointed out that reconstruction of the city socially and democratically, not just a matter of climate change. Tell us, though, about the climate change, some of the climate change elements, particularly, let's say, energy production, building a culture of conservation, and the way in which the city reconfigures in terms of housing and conservation to greatly save energy and to have more vibrant neighborhoods.
Well, in my article, I focused on three areas. They're not the only areas, but I think they're all crucial. One is energy. The second is the closely related area of transportation. And the third is the closely related area of housing. So in terms of energy, one option that's becoming more visible is community-based, community-owned energy facilities. And in cities, it's primarily community solar, which are not huge utility scale, but mass solar installations that can power multiple homes or businesses that locate on the roofs of public buildings, in some cases churches. There's a model out in Minneapolis, Shiloh Temple, where communities have come together to put solar panels on the roof of an African-American church that serves 40 families. Where this has some climate justice aspects is you don't need to own your own house. A renter can buy in, which obviously a renter can't put solar on their house. People who live in multifamily, again, can buy in. You don't have to have $10,000 or $20,000 ability to take out a loan. You can actually get in for small payments, sometimes $100, $150. So this is an option for community energy ownership, and this is something that really should be opened up to people because we are seeing revolution in solar and wind. The good news is that Trump can't stop this. The renewable energy revolution has kicked into high gear. As we always said, when we finally ramped up production, we would see effects very similar to computer chips in terms of learning curves, efficiencies of scale. Solar is getting cheap. Wind is getting cheap. It's going to be able to go without subsidies in a few years. So we need to open up these potentials to people. At the same time, the best energy is the energy we don't need to use. So we really need to think in terms of mass retrofits of buildings. And here again, there's a justice issue because there's something called the principal agent problem in housing, where if you're living in a rental house and you're paying the energy bill, the owner of the house has no incentive to make the house more efficient. So we need public financing to go through and really mass retrofit our rentals, our multifamily, and as well the low-income homeowners. We need to target energy efficiency first to the people who need their bills controlled the most, but we really need to have a more efficient society. We've talked about culture of conservation, and I think there is a huge culture-building aspect to this, which we've barely begun to approach about changing our American lifestyle. People in our cities are moving in that direction, but we need to find ways simply to use less energy, to be less of hogs, really.
Even individuals with funds or who can borrow, can put solar panels in some places, quite impressive arrays that produce a great surplus. It seems to me when you have communities with enough people who are doing it and who have some larger, not utility scales, but fairly big scale arrays of solar panels, they will create a culture like the culture of tobacco smoking. This will be a culture of energy conservation where people really think about that and in some way structure their lives so they are living much healthier as well as using a whole lot less fossil fuels. It's not just use of fossil fuels, but it's also use of all sorts of materials that are made with having to apply energy. Patrick, tell us again about your blog and your book, and we'll sign off.
Well, my blog is Cascadia Planet. That's cascadiaplanet.blogspot.com. My book is Solutionary Rail with Bill Moyer, and you can find it at Amazon. And that is about how to electrify our railroads with renewable energies and create a genuine low-carbon transportation option.
Patrick, so good to talk to you again. It's very rich what localities can do, and thanks a lot for your work.
Okay, you're welcome, Bill.
And don't violate your probation, Patrick. We need you on the outside.
No. As much as I appreciate the cuisine at the Snohomish County Jail, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, take care. So long. Bye.